All right, everybody, Terrence Pop here with another episode of Live from the Lair. And today I'm going to be answering some emails that I've got from one from a mother and a couple from soldiers who are coming up on ETSing. And then another one asked me, because he just really got done with basic and AIT, and he's moving on to his career, and he seems to be overly butthurt over the shit that happened to him in basic and AIT, and he went to infantry school at Fort Benning. He's in the Army. I don't know exactly where he's getting stationed, but it seems to be fucking with him a lot now that he's made it through basic and AIT, and he's trying to wrap his head around what the fuck just happened to him, why it was done, and he just wants to hear the method for the madness. Now, these were pretty extensive letters. I didn't print them up. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. We're just going to talk about the gists. You know, as we find ourselves surrounded by reality, which is too extreme for fantasy, we all need to find an escape. Don't judge me. Like my buddy Nelson Abick's books. Oh, wait a minute. These, Freedom's Forge, stories about all of the shenanigans that took place in the Revolutionary War. Or if you have a short attention span, try his Too Cool for Earth series. It's about colonists in space. There's a monkey called Bobby Bananas. He's not evil, just kind of secretive. Like everyone else in this story. What are you gonna do? He's also hairy. I kind of like a shaved monkey myself, but not in this context. What was I talking about? Oh yeah, you can get the first Too Cool for Earth story for just 99 cents. Go to abixrealms.com. Links are in the Meat Gazer box. Meat Gazer! This one's to the soldier out there who is finished basic and AIT, and I'm sure he's been sent to where he's going to go by now, because this letter's like 2 months old, and I think he finished basic and AIT 3 or 4 months back. And what he wrote to me about is he didn't understand why the drill sergeants, you know, were A, fucking mean, and B, seemed to come across as relatively harsh. And, you know, from the letter and the tone in which it was written, sounds to me like this guy is... came from a family with probably a helicopter parent or parents and might have a little sugar in his tank. All right. Now, I don't know if he switch hits or jumps fences or he just runs a little lean. That's his business. Doesn't really have any relevance here. And, you know, he wanted to know why he was always doing push-ups and, you know, all of the bullshit details and inspections and what have you. All right, so the way you have to understand this, okay, and I'm sure if this guy didn't ask me these questions, he would figure this out on his own given enough time, because that's the way it worked for me. Now, all I could do is compare my experience when I went through basic and AIT in 1986 at Fort Benning. And the drill sergeants I had, two of them were basically Vietnam veterans, and the other one was not. All three of them were, they're fucked up. I mean, you could tell that they're a little, you know, loopy in the thinking meat upstairs. And quite frankly, it's common. Especially if you go to a war zone, you're going to see exactly what the end result is of all that training, either good or bad. And a lot of people who go to combat and come back, if they have, you know, any kind of integrity, want to prepare other soldiers for that environment so they could come back alive. Okay, so I did push-ups all the goddamn time. I probably did between 150 and 250 push-ups a day for like the first 7 weeks, you know, on and off throughout the day. You know, they'd come in, all right, the new class, you know, they're giving us a class on something like, oh, you guys look tired, give me 50 push-ups. And everybody does their fucking push-ups, or 20 or 10, or you run in place, you know, because guess what, you know, it is what it is. People get tired in basic, and I understand that part. And what this one soldier who graduated needs to understand, and this made it easy for me while I was going through basic and IIT, is you have to realize it's a fucking game. It's you against them. All right. It is the soldiers against the drill sergeants. And, you know, the drill sergeants hinted to this when he first showed up. And they're like saying, you guys are indestructible. You're bulletproof. And you just don't know it yet. And, you know, I didn't really understand that. But after, you know, a month and a half-ish, you know, I mean, I was 18 or 17 at the time. I was in awesome shape because I just got done being, you know, wrestling in high school and 4 years of football. And so the push-ups didn't bother me. The running, I wasn't really super fast, but I wasn't the last guy. You don't want to be the last guy. And as I got to that, you know, about 6 weeks in, when I realized my drill sergeants are old. What the fuck are they going to do to me? Yeah, I'm sure they could kick my ass, but they're not going to out-PT my ass because, you know, the two guys who served in Vietnam, they were old, rickety, and broken. And the other guy, you know, he had a rough ride himself. I believe he jumped into Grenada. I don't remember his name. I don't know. But, yeah, they're just trying to toughen up your head, all right? And I'm going to talk about this at the CME coming up. And people, when they come right out of high school, they think they're all that in a bag of chips. Maybe they came from a high school where the bad guy in the block. I don't know. It's an attitude thing. But they, I mean, after 6-7 weeks, literally, we would fuck with the drill sergeant. You know? Like, what are you going to do? 50 push-ups? No problem. Oh, you want me to run a couple miles? No problem. You come back, you got a little sweat on you, but it doesn't bother you anymore because you're fucking 17, 18, 19 years old. And they're 35, 36, 37, 38, somewhere in that range. Because a lot of the drill sergeants wind up drill sergeants at the tail end of their career because they're fucking physically broken or something's going on. Now, I'm not sure if the Army's changed their policy on that now and they're bringing in younger drill sergeants. If they're doing that, you know, in my opinion, it's a mistake because there's a lot of wisdom that comes with the individuals who've been around the block. And we had a drill sergeant, the one that came from Vietnam, Drill Sergeant Long. He was 5'7", built like a soft serve ice cream cone, and had like two teeth in his head. But, you know, that dude kept up with us on the runs, everything. And just the way he walked around, when he got near you, he just felt creepy because he was just an evil man. You could tell. It just dripped off him. And I don't know. He would always like make me hold my duffel bag over my head, or he'd put me in the leaning rest and then stick the wall locker on my back and have to hold that thing up. And I mean, he was a fucking sadist. But he was making, you know, my mind stronger. I mean, I already showed up, you know, with a lot of mental toughness. And I think it was a rare exception because some of the guys in my class, they just couldn't take it. I think we lost three people in that class who just psyched out, and they were done. And they do that with, like, they make you do the road marches. And I remember we started off with, like, a 3-mile speed march, and it was fucking killing me, man. I had never done anything like that in my life. And they literally, like, well, you know, about 4 weeks from now, you're going to be doing 12 miles full kit, 12 miles full kit, 3 hours or less. And I'm like, there's no fucking way I could do that. No, it's not going to happen. Well, guess what? They made it happen. And one of the main tools they did is they speed, you know, right when you got about the 6-mile mark, once you can speed march for 6 miles, you can go 25 miles. It's all in your head. So we would, he'd like, all right, we're going out on this 6-mile road march. And we would leave. And then, you know, we're coming back in and we think we're at 6 miles when we get to the barracks. And we just keep going. So guess what? They're building your mental resiliency right there. Because, you know, we had about 15 people fall out as soon as we walked past the barracks. They just quit. All right? And that, you know, they were mentally tough enough to walk around and make it back to the barracks. But the minute they had to continue on further, they quit. And that's because they didn't have mental resiliency, which is the endurance to survive the crazy stuff. And the drill sergeants did all kinds of mind fucks like this. They did it in basic training, AIT, and they did it in rep. And it seemed, you know, pretty savage at the time. But looking back on it, my drill sergeants, you know, instilled in me some really good lessons on how not to get fucking killed and not to be an asshole and how to just do your job and, you know, get through it. So, I mean, that's what I have to say about, you know, that one soldier out there who got done with basic and AIT and he's all butthurt about it. And I'm sure it's way easier now than it was when I went through. Because I had a guy in my, we had two guys in my class who couldn't fucking read. 4 guys who quite literally was like, go in the army or go to jail. And some of them, armed robbery. One was an armed robbery. Another guy was, got into like a savage beat down with another guy, hurt him pretty bad. That's the way, you know, it used to be. And back in the day, the army was really good at taking like a mediocre dude, throw you back into the forge, crank up the heat, beat the fucking crap out of you, and forge you into something better. The army of today is not really doing that, in my opinion. All right. And another thing I learned from old Drill Sergeant Long, because I don't know what this guy, he had it in for me. I don't know if he wanted me to quit or he just, I don't know. I was the smallest guy in the platoon and he was trying to make me tougher. But we're doing the bayonet assault course. And it's like a mile long. And every, you know, 50 to 100 meters, you have to engage 1 to 3 targets with your bayonet on your end of your rifle. And right before I get up to the starting line, and just before it's going to kick off, he comes off from the side, pulls open my shirt, and throws a handful of red ants down the front of my fucking, my shirt. And then he's like, go! So I literally sprinted a whole goddamn mile being chewed up by fire ants, because they're all over down south. Made it across the finish line, you know, pulled up my canteen, washed them off. I had all kinds of bites. It was all fucked up. And I was furious. And I remember Drill Sergeant Long, you know, after he comes walking up 10 or 15 minutes later, and he could see it in my eyes. And he walks up and he goes, you hate me, don't you? I'm like, yes, Drill Sergeant. His answer, he looked at me and he said, good. Because guess what? That hate, it'll make you strong. Hate will keep you warm when you're freezing. Hate will help you make those few extra goddamn steps. And hate will allow you to drop the hammer on people. So quit your fucking crying. Get back in line. That was a really tough one to learn. So, okay. All right, another soldier. He's ETSing from the Army. This is his first and only enlistment, 4 years. And he was a combat engineer. And he's ETSing roughly in the next sometime in the next 4 months. All right. Now, a lot of people, when you get out of the service, it is a severe shock. And I'm going to tell you why. Because while you're in the service, they train you for a job. They give you the clothes you're going to wear. They provide you a place to do that job. All right. And if anything changes, they will fucking tell you. And they manage your entire life. They wake you up. They do PT with you. Then you go to breakfast. Then you do personal hygiene. And then you show up at first formation. All right. Now, the personal hygiene and breakfast might switch some units. In the grunt units, they don't give a fuck. You work your day. If you're not in the field, you have your work from 9 to roughly 5 o'clock, whatever that is. A lot of it's busy, stupid work. Okay, and then they send you to the chow hall for lunch, or they provide you an MRE or something to eat. Same thing with dinner. And then you go to final formation. They tell you what's going on for the next day, and that's the way it is. And, I mean, this sounds painfully tedious to most people, but trust me, once you get into the swing of it, it's payday, 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 payday. Year one gone. Payday, payday, payday. Two. And it just gone like that. And then all of a sudden, 30 days out, you're short. You go clear post, turn in all your shit. They buy you a plane ticket and send you back home to your home of record. And then wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You are your own fucking man. But you have not adapted to not having that routine. And it can be crushing if you let it get to you. Now, my advice is this. Save as much fucking money as you can before you leave the service. Do not take a buyout for your leave. Take terminal leave. You get more money that way and you don't get ass raped in taxes. Okay, now when you come home, it is okay to take a couple weeks off and just decompress. All right, whatever. I mean, I'm serious. You come home, don't do shit. Just go hang out with your buddies. You know, maybe, you know, go check out a local community college or something. Or, you know, throw out some resumes for a job if that's your thing. And after that 2 weeks is up, you got to get yourself back on the a regimen of some type. Make sure you set your alarm for the same time every morning. Get up. Go to bed at the same time every night. Eat your, you know, 2 to 3 meals a day. Don't go psycho, because if you're not going to do the PT, you're going to blow up. You're going to pull a pin on your fat grenade. I've seen it happen many times. All right. And then you make a plan, aiming at whatever goal it is you want to do. And then you use your discipline that you learn from the military to take the small steps needed to get to that goal. All right. And I can almost guarantee you, after 18 to 24 months, you'll be right as rain. Next one. This one is kind of crazy. All right. This one is written to me by a mother. Her son has been out of the service for roughly 12 years. He did 5 tours of duty. 2 in Iraq, 2 in Afghanistan, 1 in Northern Africa. All right, so the minute you hear Northern Africa, you know he was a special ops guy. All right. She didn't really go into detail, but that's the way that stuff works. And apparently, they have a big piece of property, let's say 25, 40 acres, something like that. And he lives in a small little cabin shed thing in the back of their property and sustains himself on his disability check. And he's done nothing else. All right. Got it. You know, she was very upset about this. Hang on. Let me Okay, he's been lost ever since. She only sees him maybe once or twice a month because he only really operates at night. He sleeps in the early morning and into the day, and has worked a couple of odd jobs here and there for the most part. He's just not having it. All right. So what's taking place here is we have a mother who wants the best for her child. And her child has been stagnant for over a decade. Okay, I don't know what his health issues are. I don't know what his disability is. Okay. That's not good. All right. For him to get out of that, he needs to want to get out of that. And I talk about this in my book, The Warrior's Way and the Soldier's Soul. No one ever heals you except you. All right. You can break your arm. They can put a cast on it. Your arm will get weak. When they take the cast off, it's up to you to rehabilitate that arm to become functional again. If you don't, then after a while, it becomes very, very hard to reconstitute and bring back. Now, this individual sounds like he's probably fighting some severe demons. PTSD. I'm there. I've been there. I suffer from the same stuff. The anxiety, the triggers, the inability to sleep. My body aches, migraine headaches. Sometimes when I have a migraine headache coming on, I lose vision in my right eye. And, the thing that brought me out of it is I was able to focus on a goal. All right, because I was literally, I was living in this hopeless area. I mean, it was just dark, absolute hopelessness. All right, now a lot of people, when they're in there, in that hopelessness, they're looking for a glimmer of light, smallest amount of hope, and they'll start moving that direction. But if you don't have that spark of hope, most people stagnate, wither, and die in that mindset and never get out of it. The key to getting out of that, and if this woman's watching, for your son, is you need to get him a goal. All right? If he has a goal, you can use that as your own ray of hope. And you can navigate yourself out of the fucking darkness using that goal as a torch to illuminate your way. It sounds easy. In practice, it's a lot more difficult. All right, so if this woman's son wants to recover, he's going to have to figure out what his goals are, start moving in that direction. Because 12 years. You figure he did, 2 tours in Iraq, 2 tours in Afghanistan, and 1 in North Africa. At a minimum, he's been in the service 6 years to 12 years, depending upon, what exactly his job was. So another thing that's very detrimental for a lot of the soldiers that have, participated in the past 2 decades of conflict, is some of these guys are doing insane amounts of deployments. Insane. Like, I have a buddy of mine who's probably going to be dead in the next 5 years, did 11 combat deployments, most of them back to back. That is very, very hard on the thinking meat. In Vietnam, you got drafted or you volunteered, you did your tour. Then you could volunteer for a second tour. If you wanted to do more than 2, you started to need to get waivers. And a waiver is simply like a permission slip signed off by a colonel or a general, whoever is the first, one star level chain of, person in your chain of command. If they sign that the release or the memo, that it's okay. Then you could do more tours. I just couldn't imagine in Vietnam, which ran for about 20 years, having guys doing 8, 9, 10 fucking tours. It's unheard of. Unheard of. But in today's day and age, that amount of touring and war is breaking the minds of the youth. Because in my opinion, the youth of today is mentally and physically weak. And you take somebody who's mentally weak and throw them into the crucible of combat, it's not a good outcome. So, you know, all I can say to this woman is show him my videos. I'm more than happy to talk to the guy in email. All right. Because this guy's lost in the sauce, man. And it's heartbreaking. Even me reading the email, I mean, I could literally feel the mother in this, like, crying her eyes out when she wrote to me. And my heart goes out, you know, to her. But that's exactly what's going on, you know, with her son. You know, he reached bullshit saturation, and he decided to sit down and say, fuck it. And it probably didn't help that, you know, he got hurt, because obviously he's on disability. And there's a stigma for men when they're hurt like that and they're on disability. And this might have a low degree of shame in it as well. So if you can take that the shame away and help them find a goal or, you know, a purpose or a mission, something to get him the fuck off his ass, that is what it's going to take. The hard part is he's got to want to do it. If he doesn't want to do it, he's just going to sit there. The military is no fucking joke, because when you show up, you write a check to the country up to the price of your life.